how did I go from aggro to hypoaggro? What's going on? Like,
are you saying hypo?
Is it not hypo?
Hyper.
Okay. You do need to delete all of this. You have to.
I mean, some people are probably not enunciating that R, so they're just like, yeah, I'm on hypoaggro.
No. I do know it's hyperaggro. So that's why you have to delete all this. If I had misunderstood it, then I would have been fine with you leaving it. But I do know it's hyperaggro. I am sleepy. Welcome to Inca Podcast, Play a Podcast.
A classic turn one play. I'm Matthew Orr Bridges.
I'm Amy Orr. And I think Matt's about to explain some stuff to me.
Hey, listen.
Hey, I meant it as a good thing.
We always gotta turn our audience against us right at the very beginning.
Why are they against us?
Because there are multiple persons who have said they only listen to this show because of you. And so if they know right off the bat that this is going to be a me-heavy episode, they're going to be like, oh, never mind, I'll just skip this one.
Man, I really hope that's true. Hi.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely true. I have it in writing. Actually, she might have deleted the comment. No, she totally deleted the comment because I saw it on like my preview. I got notified that it was on Discord. And then when I went to look at it, she had deleted it and replaced it with something else. And so I was just like, hey, what, say it with your full chest. What are you doing? Come on. We both know that Amy's...
Was it...
No, it was,
Oh, interesting.
And then she replied with like a gif that was just like, I have no idea what you're talking about. All right. Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna talk at you for a little bit.
You were going to talk at me. I meant that I was going to learn some stuff because these sorts of terminologies, really throw me off. Like I get them in general, but
no, I don't mean to suggest that you won't have contributions to this episode, because I think what's going to happen is I'm going to say some jargon and you're going to be like, oh, is that what that's called? And you're going to insert your own expertise coming from a new player to card games. And that's like the vibe of our show, right?
Yep, that's what I do.
I promise, dear listener who only listens to Amy, you will be fine to listen to this episode. I don't even think we've said what we were talking about. We're going to talk about the different archetypes that are a part of card games. And the first thing that I want to do is just kind of define what I mean by archetypes, because I think that there's a couple different definitions depending on what game you're from, what definition you're familiar with. I don't mean archetypes like in Yu-Gi-Oh! Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a very archetypical game where you have, like, in our game, it would be the version of Allies, where you're playing an Allies deck, or you're playing a Heroes deck, or you're playing an Items deck. That's not what I mean by archetypes. We're going to talk about the archetypes in respect to the kind of triangle of aggro decks, control decks, mid-range decks. Now, definitions can be kind of a gray area depending on what you're playing, what the meta looks like, but those are the main archetypes. So determining what archetype you are is going to inform your play decisions. Right? Because what archetype you are is how you should act during the game and what your deck is actually able to do, because that's what it's built to do. So does that make sense?
It does make sense. And it also reveals to me a big problem that I've had in playing, and that a lot of times I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, and we'll get into that. I think that's a very common mistake. So let's start with, I think, probably the simplest one is an aggro deck.
Aggro
is short for aggressive, right? And it is the deck archetype that is trying to win the fastest way possible. So in Lorcana, that translates into low ink cost characters who have high questing values, right? So Daisy Duck is a perfect example of a very aggressive card, a very aggro card. I don't want to give you a card when I'm playing Daisy, but I'm willing to do so because the goal of an aggro deck is to end the game as quickly as possible. Point that the aggro deck is driving towards is it doesn't matter how many cards you draw because you have to be able to answer my board. I am the aggressor. I have the initiative in this game. And if all goes to plan, you are not going to get to play all of your cards. So it doesn't right. matter how many you have in hand. So aggro decks are super interesting, and I think that there is a misconception that aggro decks are easy because their game plan is very straightforward. Because they typically don't have to concern themselves as much with other parts of the game, like card advantage or resource management. You know, they're very low to the ground, they're very fast, their decisions are very straightforward in the way that it is singular. Aggro decks are complicated because the length of the game is so much shorter. Because an aggro deck either wins very quickly or will lose slowly. So, I mean, think of how many times you've played against, like, in the previous meta, like, Amber Amethyst, and you've been able to, like, deal with all of their characters. They're at, like, 6 lore, and you have absolute control of the board. They're done. They don't have, they failed to beat you within the time frame that they needed. And so they're about to lose very slowly. So what that means is that while the game is not actually over, it's effectively over for them after, you know, say 6 or 7 turns. And because aggro's games only actually effectively last 6 or 7 turns, all of the decisions that are made within those 6 or 7 turns matter so much more than in a longer, more drawn out matchup. So aggro is not kind of a brain dead deck to play. You have to make sure that you, as the aggro player, are not making mistakes, because your mistakes are so much worse than if you were playing a slower deck.
That makes sense. Yeah. This is why I can't play aggro.
Yeah, there's not... aggro decks don't have very good recovery. You can't recover from mistakes. So if you mistakenly quest when you shouldn't, if you mistakenly play a character that's not good into this specific matchup or whatever the mistake is, it's going to matter so much more because that's one fewer decision in a game that really doesn't have as many decisions.
Mm-hmm. Your percentage is skewed.
Exactly. So aggro decks represent one end of the spectrum. On the other end of the spectrum, and something that you have a lot of experience with, are control decks. Oh, right? Yeah. Control decks are kind of, you know, they're the other end of the spectrum. They're kind of the opposite of aggro decks. They are not looking to win the game as fast as possible. They are looking to slow the game down. They want to drag out every single game because control decks thrive in the late game. They give up the early game to have total control in the late game, where it doesn't matter what your opponent is playing. It doesn't matter how much of an advantage they have. You are going to outdraw them. You are going to outthreat them because you are going to make it to a point in the game where your cards are just bigger and better than your opponent's. Now, typically, the bigger and better cards have a really high cost. And so that's why the control player's early game plan, early to mid game plan, is to stall for as long as possible until they get to that eventuality where, I mean, think of any Sapphire decks where it's just like, okay, I need to get to seven ink, and then it's just Hades, 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 over and over and over again, you know? Every Sapphire player, when they hit seven ink, they always have a Hades for some reason, except when I'm playing Sapphire.
Yeah, well, you should probably put Hades back into your deck.
Oh my god, yeah. I need to actually play Hades in order to...
Yeah.
So, control decks, again, on the opposite end of aggro, have a lot more room to make mistakes, or to maybe not make the 100% best play possible.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, the game lasts for so long. There are so many turns, so many decision trees, that any one individual decision is not going to be weighted as much, where you can actually compensate later and still win the game.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, you do love yourself a control deck.
So. I do. It's interesting because it doesn't make me comfortable. Because when you and I play, you hear my thoughts, where other people don't necessarily hear all of them. But you know, I'm playing control against whatever the hell you're playing. And I'm sitting there going like, okay, he's at 14. 14's fine. 14 is fine. I can cut. It's fine. It's fine. I just... let's keep him at 14. 14 will be fine. And so I'm not comfy over there in control world, but it's still where I like to be.
Yeah. There are a lot of instances where control decks are, you know, they are control decks, but they have to be a little riskier than maybe a control deck in like Magic the Gathering can be. But I mean, this does happen in Magic also, where, you know, you're walking that razor thin margin. I can't tell you how many games I have won while my opponent is at 19, you know, where it's like, all right, you're done. you have quested to 19. I have the B prepared. Here's the B prepared. We are done. I have seven cards in hand. Six of them are removal spells. I mean, it's very stressful. And I have lost more games on that razor's edge than I have ever won. But, you know, that's a function of luck. That's a function of we don't have reactive cards in terms of like instant speed cards. And so that dampers control decks a little bit. You know, the spectrum from aggro to control within Lorcana is a lot smaller than it would be in other card games that have been around for much longer and have had time to lengthen that spectrum, right? Because, I mean, think about this game before Daisy Duck was printed. Like, we had aggro decks, but they were relying on Lilos and Maleficents, you know, these one-cost one-ones that quested for two. And it was really difficult for aggro decks to actually get a leg up because they were so easily countered. And when Daisy Duck was printed, what happened is that you actually could see the aggro to control spectrum lengthen on the aggro side. So the spectrum is a little bit wider now, but aggro is taking up a little bit more, so it's not exactly one for one even. And I think that was a really good inclusion. And then you have probably Maui Shark would be the best counterexample, where you have the release of Maui Shark and then all of a sudden the control side lengthens. And Maui Shark with Pirate's Life represents a different angle that control can use. Like, oh, you're at 19? All right, well, Maui Shark is going to sing Pirate's Life. You're going to go back down to 17. Then he's going to challenge your 1-1. And then I'm going to get it back and I'm going to play it again. And you're going to go down to 15. And all of a sudden, I have controlled the board. You are no longer a threat of winning the game. So you had a very wide spectrum, and every card that is released on either side of the archetype increases that spectrum. So when it comes to aggro versus control, that is a classic two archetype scenario. And we have talked a lot on the show about who is the aggro deck and who is the control deck in a particular matchup.
Sure.
And it's because that's a dichotomy in game, regardless of what your archetype is. But when we're talking about archetypes, there are other options other than aggro and control. So sitting in the middle is called mid-range. So mid-range is, you know, it's a middle ground between aggro and control. Their game plan is not to be as fast as aggro, but not to be as slow as control. They typically will play cards that will be threats on their own. Think of like Genie, Genie is a really good mid-range card. Think of cards that provide card advantage, efficient removal, like Strength of a Raging Fire is a really good one, or Zeus, Along Came Zeus in the last set is a really good example. They want to have the best cards in the mid game than either the aggro or the control deck. Aggro deck is running out of steam in the mid game. Control deck still hasn't gotten up to where they turn the corner and start taking control of the game. And so they want to have the best cards in the very middle of the game. So Amethyst Steel is a good mid-range deck. You know, in sets 2, 3, 4, 5, Ruby Amethyst could probably be considered a good mid-range deck. They live in that middle ground. Mid-range is also the hardest to define. It's one of those things where it's kind of like, if you know it, you know it. Like, you'll know it when you see it. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about Lorcana is, because of the structure of the game, most decks are going to fall into the mid-range category. It's all kind of... I know some people have actually criticized the game for being, like, mid-range soup, where there's not a lot of incidental lore gain outside of character-based lore gain. So, like... You know, we obviously have the goats, when we have the white roses, and we have the gathering wisdom and knowledge, but we haven't been able to get a deck that is able to only exclusively use those quote-unquote burn cards. So every deck is required to have some amount of characters. And even the control decks, you know, in Magic, you sometimes will have control decks in Magic that don't have any creatures in them. They are not contesting the board in that way. Can't really do that in Lorcana, at least not yet, and I don't know whether or not we will be able to. It just doesn't seem like the type of game that the developers are looking for. The developers want characters challenging and questing on board. What that results in is a lot of different decks becoming kind of mid-range because of that, because the aggro decks sometimes need to go a little bit bigger, and the control decks sometimes need to go a little bit smaller. And that is encroaching into the center of that spectrum where the mid-range decks call home. So those are the three main types that we see in Lorcana. We have aggro decks on one end, control decks on the other, mid-range decks in the middle. And the typical rock, paper, scissors format that we have is aggro decks will beat control decks, because aggro decks control the early game and can go underneath the control decks. Control decks will beat mid-range decks, because mid-range is kind of doing a worse version of control, where their cards are not quite as powerful, but they're not fast enough to beat control before control gets online. Mm-hmm. And then mid-range decks will end up beating aggro decks, because aggro decks are not fast enough to get underneath mid-range before mid-range is online. So okay, we got a nice rock, paper, scissors, which is very cool. Obviously, that's not saying that none of these decks can win in their off matchup. And the cards that everybody plays also matters a lot, because like I said, all of our decks kind of push towards mid-range. But that's the basic idea of aggro control mid-range.
Then my question of what the hell makes something hyper aggro?
Yeah.
And
so,
is there something called hyper control?
Ooh, yeah. So when people talk about hyper aggro, what they're referring to is ignoring that tendency that I was talking about to push towards the mid range. So if you are a hyper aggro deck, you are all in on the aggro plan. I would have maxed out on goats and white roses. I might have even played like This Is My Family and Gathering Wisdom and Knowledge. I would be all in on, I am going to beat you by turn 5 or 6, or I am going to lose. So that would be like the hyper version of aggro. I haven't heard of anybody refer to like a hyper control deck, but I guess that could be kind of what I was talking about with Magic, where you have decks that are completely creatureless in Magic, where they're not trying to hit you down to zero in Magic. They'll figure out what their win con is later. That doesn't matter. What matters is stopping you. So if a hyper control deck were to exist in Lorcana, it would have to be something where there is just such a critical mass of good, efficient removal in the format to allow the control deck not to have to play their own characters to challenge your characters.
Interesting. Interesting. I'm just sitting here thinking of possibilities.
There has been control decks in Magic where they don't have any creatures in their deck. They only draw cards and have like board wipes and removal. Like that is the entirety of their deck. But Magic has this thing where the Lorcana equivalent would be like if one of your ink could become a character for a single turn.
Okay.
And so what it would look like is that you would pay a certain amount of ink, you would like animate one of your ink, you would quest with it, and then it would go back to being ink on your opponent's turn, which would make it invulnerable to character removal.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, so I mean it's slow going, you know, but the control deck doesn't care. It's like the control deck's like, yeah, I'm gonna win at my leisure.
Yeah.
You are free to concede at any time.
This is my hyper control. This is I'm
exactly.
I'm
like this is what I am trying to do. And there are some people who are just like, no, well, play it out. Like, I know that I'm dead and I can't do anything about it, but you have to play it out because I'm trying to punish you. It's like, you're not punishing me. I chose this deck.
Do you think the people who, like, go all in on locations are kind of and I know that nobody really says hyper control, but I'm going all in on it. Do you think that the people who choose to do all locations or something are thinking like hyper control?
I could see that. It's a very similar, it's, you know, it's passive lore gain. They're not trying to contest the board. I think locations are inherently more fragile because
sure, 'cause they're not hitting back.
They're not hitting back. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, think about the metagame that we had in like Vegas with Ruby Amethyst and Queen's Castle, where there are so many times where I'm just like, all right, well, here's a Queen's Castle. Oh, you killed my characters. Okay, here's a B prep. The game is now about me preventing you from killing my Queen's Castle.
Yeah, I mean, same as last set with McDuck Manor. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It was everywhere. And yeah, it became about like B prep play out to McDuck Manors.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're playing the Ruby Sapphire Mirror and you know that the first person to play a B prep is going to lose because your opponent is going to follow it up with double McDuck Manor.
Right.
Yeah. So I could see that kind of inching its way towards like a more control spectrum. Like that is very much towards the far boundaries of the control end of the spectrum. Still got to play characters. So
Matt, I'm going to figure it out. They're going to have to give me some locations back. But yeah, I'm going to figure out
hanging around.
And then I'm going to start telling people that I'm playing hyper control and they're going to roll their eyes at me. but then they're going to play me and then they're going to be like, "Oh, Amy, can I please just like play?" Okay. Now there's a question, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So was the Bucky Diablo technically hyper control? People were never getting
that
to play their turn.
Is a very interesting question. And I think it leads us into the next two secret archetypes. Ooh. So there are two other archetypes that exist that, again, kind of like mid-range, they're a little bit harder to define. Well, one is very easy to define. The one that you're talking about, and I think is primarily Emerald's identity, is tempo. So a tempo deck is kind of like a mix between aggro and control. It's not mid-range. It doesn't sit in between them. It is a mix between aggro and control, where tempo decks will establish a singular threat, a couple different threats. They're not. Mm-hmm. And tempo decks will protect that one or two threats from anything that their opponents do. So, and that's why I said that I think it's like an Emerald based deck, because you know I could see Emerald Amethyst being a sort of tempo deck. I could see Ruby Amethyst at certain points being a tempo deck, where it is I'm going to play out Flynn Rider on two, and then I'm going to play Mim on three, bounce my one drop, and then I'm going to banish anything that could threaten this situation that I am in, you know, and I'm going to win off of Flynn Rider. Flynn Rider was a very tempo heavy card. Emerald decks, Emerald Amethyst, or even Emerald Steel with Bucky, I would say probably lean more towards the tempo end of now this three-dimensional spectrum. We have like a vertical axis somewhere where they establish a threat and then they Mother Knows Best. And then they, Strength of a Raging Fire, they Zeus, they, you know, they're bouncing things back to your hand with, we don't talk about Bruno, right? They maybe are not permanently dealing with your threats, but they're throwing you off just enough for them to win. So that's kind of like the aggro side of things, right? Where they don't expect you to not have answers to things. They expect you to have answers to things, but if they play their cards right, they can stall you long enough to secure their threats. So in the Bucky meta, if I had to classify Bucky, he's probably a tempo card, because if you remember back to when we had to play against Bucky, if they do Bucky and then start discarding your hand, especially when I was playing like Ruby Amethyst, my game plan was, all right, Ruby Amethyst draws a lot of cards. He has Bucky on two. I'm not playing any card that does not also draw me a card. And my game plan is to get to seven and board wipe. Like that right. has to be my game plan. But the point of the Bucky deck was I couldn't play my cards in the way that the deck was designed to play the cards.
Right. So it's throwing you off your tempo.
Yeah.
I get that. It still feels very control to me, though, because...
I mean, it is, though, because it's a mix of aggro and control. It is.
Okay.
It is being aggressive while also throwing you off your tempo and... In relation to you playing the tempo deck, you are keeping tempo with your game plan, right? So it's kind of a double meaning when it comes to the word tempo. Tempo is an interesting archetype. I would say it's a very viable archetype. I think in Lorcana, it obviously looks a little bit different. But I would classify Emerald decks as having a predisposition for tempo decks.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like the never questing with Bucky, the never questing with Prince John. I gotcha. The guys that you're like, this guy needs to sit here, but he is never doing anything.
Right.
This guy's entirely passive. Until it's like, okay, time to win.
Right, exactly. Yeah, time to push it. Time to crescendo.
Crescendo. Okay, so I think you said that there were two hidden archetypes. So you've told me about tempo. What is the fifth one?
So the fifth type, thank you so much for asking. The fifth type is combo. A combo deck. Or a combination deck. So combo is in an interesting spot because it was originally a part of the main three archetypes. It used to be aggro, control, and combo decks. And I think probably what happened was card game designers realized that not a lot of people liked combo decks, and so they started shifting away from making them, and thus gave birth to the mid-range deck to kind of fill the role within the rock, paper, scissors. Because it used to be, you know, aggro would beat control would beat combo would beat aggro. And, you know, the word combo gets thrown around a lot in reference to like, oh yeah, these two cards are a combo, and it's just cards that are good together. And so I would submit that there are two different things that people will call combo. One is what I just described, where two different cards are just, they work together, like Mimfox and Merlin Goat, or any of the Mims and any of the Merlins. Those are cards that work really well together. You could call them a combo in the literal sense. I think more what people mean when they say that, though, they mean that they're synergistic. They have a synergy, and it could be a very powerful synergy, but I wouldn't call them a combo in the TCG jargon way. When me and lots of other people refer to a combo deck, they mean an infinite combo. They mean a combination of cards that win the game when they are played together.
Okay, I need to pause you because you are blowing my mind. I've heard of combo decks. In my head, it was the definition of mid-range because it was the combo of control and aggro.
Oh, see, yeah, not so, madam.
So please, if you're gonna call me Madam Mim. But
that's Madam Mim to you. Your character model, by the way, should absolutely be Mim if mine is Merlin, but whatever.
We are so far past that. I don't think that that's possible. I'm pretty sure that I came up with Maleficent before you came up with Merlin.
I think you might have said it first, but that was... Well, I think okay. I was thinking...
That's what matters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, dibs, right?
Yeah. Anyway, so point being... Anyway. Mind blown. Please continue to blow my mind.
Yes. Well, so we're to the quiz portion of our podcast, everybody's favorite segment. Amy,
I forgot to take notes.
Ever seen a Lorcana combo deck?
With my new knowledge.
Given my definition of it?
With my new knowledge, yes, I have.
Okay. What was it?
Something happened where something else happened where something else happened, and they drew their whole deck and then won.
Thank you so much for listening. That's our show.
Yeah. It was the only time I've ever seen it happen, and I know it was like a thing.
Yeah, yeah. So
okay, hold on. Who do I know? What do I know? It was Monstro.
We will give partial credit on this quiz if okay. You can, you know, yes. Get
all right, here
pieces
we go.
Correct.
Okay, so it was Monstro, and ooh, I want to say maybe like a duck who gave characters tap to draw a card.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a song involved, maybe like one that when you, oh God, I don't know.
You're doing really well.
Oh no, the song.
Don't ruin it now.
Gives you lore, yeah? Maybe?
No.
No, it doesn't. Oh no. Oh no, I don't know. Oh no, I don't know, I don't know. Oh, I'm so close.
You are. You're missing, you've identified that there is a song involved.
And I know. And that you have
know
to have
that for some reason you gain lore.
Yeah.
But you are missing what two pieces go together with that. So
yeah. The
song itself does not gain you lore.
Oh, it's like any song, isn't it? You just have to have a song. Is that
yes,
right?
But it is a specific song that they use. Oh. So I'm going to give you half credit. That was really good.
Man.
You did get that it was Monstro, who from Reign of Jafar is an 8 cost that says you can choose and discard a card and you ready the character. And he can't quest, but whatever. We're not questing with him. And then 8 cost Donald Duck Coin Collector.
Okay, so says, you knew it was a duck.
When you play this character, your other characters gain tap to draw a card.
Okay.
So what you do is, because of Monstro's ability to discard a card to ready him, and because of Donald Duck's ability that says tap to draw a card, once you have a dry Monstro and you play a Donald Duck for the turn, you can draw your entire deck.
And this is a secret way for the other person to win, because you just accidentally decked yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So then what they do is that they use a song called We Know the Way.
Oh.
A 3-cost song that you choose a card from your discard and then shuffle it into your deck. And then you reveal the top card of your deck. And if it has the same name as the chosen card, you can play it for free.
But so what you've done is you've gone through your whole deck so you know where it is. Wait, no.
Well, so you've gone through your entire deck. Your entire deck is now in your discard. So what you do is that you play a We Know the Way, choosing an Allen of Dale, which is a character that says whenever you play a song, you gain 1 lore. And so then you have to have a second We Know the Way, and then you play that, choosing the first We Know the Way, putting that back into your deck. And so now you have a We Know the Way on top, and you've just played a We Know the Way, but because you now have an Allen of Dale, you gain 1 lore.
Oh, God.
And so then you play the other We Know the Way for free, choosing the first one, and then you just do that over and over again.
Blah. That's what I have to say about that. Blah.
So you do that over and over again, you eventually gain infinite lore. So very interesting. But that is a combo deck.
Okay.
And so I think for the most part, TCGs have drifted away from making obvious combos.
That's, well, I'm glad you threw in the word obvious, because I feel like, just with what I know about Ravensburger, is that they might not have known this was going to happen.
Like, I doubt they did.
Yeah. Like, I think that has to be something almost all of the time that it is discovered by the players. And then,
yeah,
the makers are like, oh, yeah, I guess yep, we did set that up.
Well, and, you know, part of me wonders if any combo really was ever meant to happen.
I feel like if they came out in the same set, like if everything, all of the important pieces come out in the same set? They didn't, right?
No.
Yeah.
I
think if
Donald Duck and Monstro did, but they're only the setup, you know, they don't actually gain the lore.
Right.
But there's a very famous, I'm sure that there are several famous examples from Magic, but there's a very famous one, kind of in modern history, where it was 2 back-to-back sets, and they were part of it was called a block. They were part of the same like narrative, and so the sets were clearly designed together, and they printed 1 card in 1 set and another card in the second set, that just both of them being on the field at the same time created an infinite combo.
Oh.
And the moment that the other one was released, everybody was like, hey, so guys, this is a thing. And everybody's like, oh yeah, that is a thing. And for like 3 weeks, not even that, maybe 2 weeks, it was just rampant everywhere, because it was such an easy combo to pull off. It was turn 3, play this thing, turn 4, play this, infinite dudes to attack you with.
Wow.
And if so, on turn three, if your opponent, if the opponent didn't have a way to remove the three cost card, then they could just die on the next turn. And you didn't even need to go infinite the next turn. But the thing that happened was it was just like, yeah, I'm going to play this out. If I ever have the other combo piece, then you're going to lose. So you better be prepared for it, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. And they had to issue an emergency ban because they so very clearly didn't realize.
Yeah. That's so funny. I love the idea of the creators just like straight up messing up like that, because that can only be viewed as a mess up. Like, that's a mistake. Like, you can't.
Yeah, there's no.
Yeah, you can't.
No other way around it.
Set something up like that. That.
Well, and here's the thing: is that, like, we've said it before, you are never going to beat the collective knowledge and wisdom,
right,
of the entire community. And that doesn't just go for you and me. That goes for the designers also. Like, just because they designed the game does not mean that they are going to see literally every single interaction.
Absolutely.
And the Monstro Donald Duck combo, that's a deterministic combo. So if you set it up properly, you know, you have to have a certain number of cards in hand to be able to discard the Monstro's ability. You had to have not inked certain number of cards, right? But, you know, if you set it up properly, it's deterministic. It's going to happen that way every single time.
Yeah. When I played against that, when we were done, I said, okay, cool, we're done. Tell me at what point I was screwed. And so then he and I discussed what I would have needed to do. And he was like, yeah, you didn't have it. So it's not that he was like, it's not that you missed your opportunity. You didn't have an opportunity. And that was both reassuring and disheartening.
You right, know, the, right.
The idea that it's like, okay, when the Monstro hits the field, I have to remove him right then.
That's the window. Yeah, exactly. The closest thing that we have had and that has been meta-relevant is Jafar Wheel.
Oh, sure.
That is a non-deterministic combo deck. I would still say it's I would still classify it as combo, even though it's not technically an instant win combo. But that's a non-deterministic one. I can't be like, oh, I guess I win. You know, I have to, you know, I exert Jafar, I sing Whole New World, I get from 6 to 13. And then if I get another Whole New World and I have 5 ink, I do win from there, right? So probably more synergistic than combo, but because it does present 14 to 21 burst lore in one go, it is probably the closest thing that we've had to a combo deck that has actually been relevant in the game.
I mean,
I think that that's fine.
Yeah, I'm certainly no expert, having only been told the actual definition of a combo deck today, but I'd count Jafar Wheel.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Jafar Wheel was interesting. It definitely had its moments, and it presented a different axis to attack like combo decks do, where combo decks typically win or lose based off of their combo, and good combo decks slot into the rock, paper, scissors by typically being fast enough to beat aggro decks, but too slow for control deck to beat control decks, where control decks are typically able to disrupt the combo in order to win.
Right.
So
right.
I think combo could have its place. I think it very much depends on the questions and answers that are available in the format, where the question that combo is asking each opponent needs to be able to be answered in a clean way, and so that it doesn't warp anything within the metagame. Because I think when it does warp things, that's when it becomes toxic and unenjoyable. So I am open to combo decks existing. I think that a lot of card game designers are not going to purposefully do it, like we said. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it incidentally does happen, like Jafar or like Moby Duck, then I think it's fine as long as it doesn't destroy the rest of the rock, paper, scissors metagame that I think is very healthy. I think a healthy metagame is a rock, paper, scissors metagame within these archetypes. I think everybody has, I mean, maybe not in innate sense, but when you are discussing matchups and you're like, oh, I have a really good matchup into this deck, I have a really bad matchup into this deck, you basically are talking about the archetypes, even if you are not putting the terms to it. You know, like, you know, as a Ruby Sapphire or Sapphire Amethyst player, if you go up against an aggro deck, that is a worse matchup for you than other decks. So yeah, you know that because of the archetypes, even if you don't know it by name.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, yeah.
I think a lot of players are in a similar position. So I think giving it a name and allowing you to kind of package all of these different deck types that maybe you weren't able to before figure out, like, why does Sapphire Amethyst feel the same as Ruby Sapphire? You know, now you can give them kind of a category and say, oh, because they're control decks. You'll be able to think about the game on a little bit of a deeper level. And I think that is what growing within a card game is.
Yay, I'm growing.
Yay. Did you hear that? That was the sound of leveling up.
Man, we should really keep track of that, because I think this is my second time.
Yeah, yeah. We should have experience points. All right. Well, that's our show. We did it every time we record.
Every time.
Like, okay, are we gonna do it this time? Are we gonna get through an episode?
And every time we did it,
100% successful at getting through episodes that we release.
Yes, we won't talk about the ones that we don't release. That
we don't talk about
through.
Those. Nope. Those don't exist. There have never been episodes that we release where we start recording. We're like, oh, this really isn't a good topic, is it?
I would love it if we recorded re-released one of those where we're just in the middle. We're like, I kind of don't want to talk about this anymore.
I kind of don't know what I'm saying. We can do that. We'll get a Patreon eventually, and we'll put that behind like tiers of payment. Like, right. If you want to hear our bloopers or our screw ups, you have to pay us directly for that. We're not getting paid for this.
I mean, I think that that's fair, because if I'm going to be embarrassed by my screw ups, then I should get paid for it.
So thank you so much for listening yet again. I hope Amy was a part of this episode enough for you to stick around until the very end. You know who you are. So we have actually started becoming a little bit better about our social medias. So follow us on those social medias. We're at Inca Podcast. We are at Inca Podcast Play a Podcast on Instagram. We're also at IncaPodcast.com, where we have all of our episodes and a nice little playlist for you, as well as a section for articles. We have some beginning of the format fabled lists that might be some good starting points for some of you. And we're going to be posting some other things there that maybe supplement or maybe don't deserve a full podcast episode, but we'll be posting some musings there. I wonder if there's something with the muses, the card.
Ooh.
The musings. Anyway. tell us what your favorite archetype is. And tell us some classic archetypical moments that you've had with your favorite archetype. You know, like, did you get to live the dream of going like Daisy, Piglet, Lady Piglet last set? That was hot. I did that a couple times.
And any of those plays where you're like, I did the thing, right? Like,
yeah.
Cause
like you got the moral victory.
Yeah. Like, okay, fine. You win, but I did the thing. I want to hear those. Those are good.
Have you ever had all four of your McDuck manners out at one point?
Oh God. I don't think I have, but that sounds fun.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds demoralizing.
Yeah, what do you do? You just don't do it. You lose.
I think I say, oh, I quit.
Yeah, yeah. I was playing a tempo deck in Magic several years ago, and I had, you know, just a very aggressive 3-cost threat that was basically questing for 3 every turn, and the only thing I did is I played that on 3, and then I just protected it. Every single turn, I was just like, my opponent tried to remove it, and I said, nope. And my opponent tried to remove it, and I said, nope. My opponent tried to block it, and I said, get that out of there. And I beat him, like, turn 6 or 7, and he's just like, I don't understand. I thought people came to play the game. Like, why do you want the game to be over so quickly? It's like, well, I want to win.
Yeah.
This won. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us stories like that. I love those stories.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So, cool. Drop us a like and a comment and all that sort of stuff. Like, it helps us more than you know. And it's free. We're not asking you for anything except a little bit of your time. But until then, see ya.
Goodbye.
Cool, cool, cool. I liked that episode.
Yeah, that was good. You know, there were points where I was like, I've got nothing to say here. But once we got past like that, then it was just a good conversation.